thing. I just kind of went into some sort of disassociation thing because I think it was like kind of intimate and intense for me.
Okay, yeah.
And Kevin, you know, was real positive and stuff. And I was sort of like, or I was like, I think I failed, but I mean, I know I didn't, but.
Well, you might have.
I feel like.
Don't be so
like,
sure.
Oh, I feel like I should be able to handle that kind of intensity a little better. Was.
Uh huh.
But it was interesting, though. I mean, I'd see him again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Yeah, open a window for whatever, what kind of experience or intimacy you can have and do, and whether it's real or unreal, or,
yeah,
you know, you're inspired to tell a story or be introvertedly uncomfortable, you know, fail the test of intimacy.
Well, the silent intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And maybe because it was a big group, I don't know. But go on, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, there's all kinds of ways of, interfacing with a so-called other person. Terms of the emphasis on the present nature of discovery. So if someone's, you know, interpreting their present experience or their prior experience through I, me, mine, which means my story and my suffering and my failure at ameliorating anything,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The aimlessness of my life,
yeah.
The frustrations, the regrets, right? The supreme confusion that I feel. You know, once you dive in that pool, it holds the energy a certain way. And typically, if someone starts talking about themselves in a certain manner, and you do nothing with it, you know, the mind or the identity runs out of.
It's like that.
Runs out of steam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's yourself.
Yeah, it's like it runs out of steam. It's definitely a strange kind of yoga to just experiment with not caring about how it is you feel about things.
Mm-hmm. Well, things kind of wind down and with stillness or silence, I think.
They can wind through a certain texture or being a certain way. And likewise, everything that was a problem or a trouble or a repetitive voice of self-negation, are all gone. Maybe not forever, because they certainly seem tenacious. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know that, you know, this nagging thing that's been going on is going to come at me again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a horror movie.
I am a horror movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yes, I am a horror movie,
mm-hmm.
and I have no influence or control over what mm-hmm. shows up in consciousness and or the way that I respond to it. And even our apparent confusion, behavioral confusion, primatitis, right? Having a bad case of primatitis is kind of contrived. As long as we're motivated to correct this portfolio of irritability, thinking, proper feeling, proper gratitude, we're going to come up empty-handed. We can't corral the charming chaos of mind into a condition that ultimately pleases us.
Doesn't behave.
We don't.
Yeah.
We don't obey ourselves. We don't behave. Intentions and reminders and sticky notes, we don't listen to them. And yet we continue to attempt, right, to seek resolution or some kind of peace of mind in the midst of this, right, firestorm. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. I mean, being aimless, purposeless, without a personal history, from moment to moment, is completely disorienting. From the vantage point of the person that we take ourselves to be.
Excuse me, Jeff, is this water fit to drink?
Yeah, I believe it is. I think it'll make your hair turn gray, though. That's no risk.
Or make you lose your hair, I guess.
Or you can lose your hair. Or frustrated in traffic.
Or it could give you a lot of frustration tolerance.
The apparent momentum of disagreeability, irritability, vulnerability, and the agenda to want to fix or correct things blots out the always available gift or invitation to really be done with yourself. We're not prepared to be really done with ourselves. We want to feel better about the imagination of ourselves. That's why the mind trips on everything that's disagreeable presently or in the past or likely to be disagreeable in the future, because this is a horror show. And seeing that, or just teasing it out, not defending against it, right, can be kind of relaxing in a way. Oh my God, I am a horror show, and nothing's going to change that. Now, if there's no purchase or quarrel with the revelation of being a heart, who knows what's possible next?
Well, it's interesting. If the goal is just to end distress or suffering, I mean, maybe that could be done if you load it yourself up with SSRIs or something. I mean, I don't know.
People have tried and continue to try all manner of remedy, right?
So it's got to be more than that, though, because... I don't know. There might be a...
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to know, like, what drives all this. Like, what drives...
It might be fair to say it's impossible to know all the time. All the time it's impossible to know what's driving the curious nature of your present experience. Yeah. So if I presume that I am in control, should be in control, be in more or better control, even be in more control through surrendering, right, as a strategy.
Yes.
Right?
Serenity now!
Yeah. Or, you know, or practicing the ecstatic narcissism of a Byron Katie, let's say, by looking at everything that you think and just, you know, untruing yourself to liberation, which is a bizarre kind of ecstatic narcissism, because what kind of peace do you think you're going to receive by untruing
yourself?
Well, everything that appears in your mind, you know, that may be a voice of discontent or disagreeability. That's not true. Is it really true? You know? But, I mean, you don't really want to be in – you don't want to be so incarcerated by the frivolity of thinking that you have to be ever vigilant. I mean, give me a fucking break. What do I have to – oh, that's not true. Oh, it's not true. Oh, that – oh, now this. Now – no, it's not true.
I look forward to it being true.
Someday it may be true, but not right now. But not right now.
For the true part.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can – I was on a phone call the other day, voyeuristically, of a woman that Nan brought to my attention. This woman is a – well, I mean, she's a Byron Katie clone. I'm sure she has her own, you know, confidence or revelation that fuels her enthusiasm to work with people the way that she does. But to me, I was like listening to truly a Byron Katie clone in terms of the delivery, the thought, the enthusiasm, the tone of voice even. I mean, it was like she had just, well, she was channeling Byron Katie.
Which is
enlivening people on the call to play the not true game. It was a teleconference, you know, that you could join in anonymously. I guess I was anonymous. I didn't say anything. And for a short time, some people could express a certain kind of enthusiasm or humor or appreciation for the message that they're not true.
Now, was it just her talking the whole time? Or
there were other people on the call that would, you know, ask questions or present their, in Yiddish, it's mishigas.
Their own bullshit. Yeah.
That's right. That's as good a translation as any. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I don't know if I have enough interest or energy to untrue myself all the way to liberation. I mean, maybe there's another angle to this.
Sort of end every sentence with a not.
Okay.
You're still caught in that loop no matter what.
I think maybe you might be still caught in some kind of loop of identification, of presumption, of the sense of agency that can untrue.
Yeah. Or expectation. It's like, oh, okay, I see.
Yes.
What now?
Behavioral expectation, the amelioration of suffering, yeah. You know, all of this. I mean, look how quickly this regresses into a labyrinthine, minotaur-like, right, condition of I don't know what the fuck is going on. We think that we can convince ourselves from moment to moment of some slice of true long enough to apply untrue. Where does that leave us? Well, you know, in an endless loop, in an endless repetition of the you know, the movement of psychiatric expression. I wonder if there might be something else. I don't know. Just curious about it. There might be something else.
It seems to me to all be, if we can use the term object-oriented, objects meaning thoughts, structures, not necessarily physical objects, but, you know, concepts, things, right, wrong, true, untrue. And I would venture to say that you can, I mean, it might be good as an entry point. You got to start somewhere, kind of.
And once you start it, it's hard to stop because, like, every time, you know, there's a moment, what do I do with myself? Well, I can ask myself an inquiry question.
Yeah, there's this kind of perpetuity of what do I do with myself? Yeah. And the what do I do with myself is all, you're already too late. You're already in the fixity of, you know, an identification of some kind of durability, asking the question of my present experience, what do I do with myself? And then I'm overwhelmed by the horror show of so much irritability and disagreeability, gross and subtle, that now I deploy some kind of strategy, which is the not true strategy. And I mean, really, what is it going to do? I don't know.
Well, I think it might be a valid psychological tool.
Very, very good. Let's hope that it's that. Let's hope that it's more than that. I don't know.
I mean, I think there's some utility to it.
Why not? Stubbing your toe, running into a wall at 60 miles an hour with or without a seatbelt. You know, there's utility in everything.
Come on. Kind
of right? Being blown out of the air, flying over the Ukraine. I mean, I don't know. Hitting the Alps at, you know, 300 miles an hour in an aircraft. You know, what the fuck? Who knows? I mean, what, you're alive today, it seems, right? Even after this many hours of apparently, after this many hours since whenever it was that we woke up and all the perils that we had to endure, we're like, we made it this far. And that's pretty much all you can say. Well, I made it this far, you know? Well, I got dinner plans on the weekend and I'm still angry about, you know, that. Or, fuck, I'm a total fool and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But what do you have? I mean, all of that's clearly imaginary, right? Everything that's swarming and swimming in your so-called mind, which is the fascination of creating continuity of self or justification of self, is just imagination. When you boil it all off, if you do a reduction sauce on your own mishigas, right? Well, I made it this far today. I sure wish I was happier about a thousand things. I sure wish this spiritual shit would kick in, make a difference or a dent.
A peaceful person.
Yeah. Yeah, I sure wish the spiritual shit would just kick in so I could say... Yeah.
You know, we've talked several times about the ring's truth, you know.
Right.
And there seems to be this intensity or energy.
Yeah.
Ring's true. It's like a dopamine response.
Uh-huh.
You know. And I find, like so many other things that I can get addicted to.
Right.
I can get addicted to that. Absolutely.
Yes.
So I will read things to get the high
from
the ring's truth.
Very good.
I mean, it's like, well, shit.
Yeah. I hear you.
Nothing sacred.
Right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. So this is fun. I mean, when you look at inducing or suggesting a state change in your own consciousness, you know, so you pick up a Byron Katie book or you watch a Rupert Spira video or you read Nirsagadatta on the toilet, right? Or you smoke something or drink something, or let's say you get runner's high. You know, you put your shorts on and your favorite Nikes and you hit the pavement, right? People do whatever they do to get through the day or to participate in the curious nature of experiencing to optimize the serotonin uptake receptors? Okay. So then that's, I don't know what to call that. Is that psychiatric? It's more kind of biologic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the storyline that accompanies it is really just a tag along to the primacy of what we could call a biologic impulse for optimization of homeostasis or getting high, the ecstasy, not the drug, but the, right, the revelation. So it could be that ecstasy as revelation is driving us. And we're semi-conscious of it, or the tools that we've been exposed to and or choose to deploy to optimize ecstasy are the best we can do with what we got, which is kind of a random deliverable. What you've been exposed to in your life has come at you by choice, by premeditation? Absolutely not. You're the product of an incredibly random set of inputs to shape your persona, your self-identity, your capacity for coping with frustration, or your lack of capacity for coping with frustration, or the things that you stuff in your face, put in your mouth, you know, read, listen to, participate in, to optimize, if not maximize, ecstasy, relevance, revelation, spiritual succor. I don't know what the fuck is going on. And in doing this random walk, which is kind of an investment idea, right? The random walk through our life, as if our life is directed or directable. As if it's directed or directable, drives us insane. It creates or blossoms as a truly schizophrenic and narcissistic expression. And that's a buzzkill. In other words, it seems that living through fantasy, the myth of continuity, culpability, corporeality, turns out to be a buzzkill. And all of the attempts that we make to maximize or optimize the ecstasy seem to have, you know, random results and not very lasting, not long lasting.
It seems like most of my efforts are to stop the buzzkill, because
yeah,
there's just buzzkill everywhere you turn.
You know? That's a good t-shirt. There's buzzkill everywhere I turn.
Yeah. But
in other words, right now it's this whole mortgage process. But I mean, it's like one thing after another, after another. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's unrelenting. I mean, even if you go on retreat and withdraw from the buzzkill vicissitudes of managing your so-called financial or affairs, then you just have a bunch of psychic buzzkill.
Yeah.
More proliferation, more profusion that appear as or are interpreted as obstacles, not enoughness, right? Failure of some kind, frustration, ambiguity, right? Self whipping of a kind. Oh my God. Just being under the influence of our own persona is just enough to make you weary.
Yeah, one of the ones I was listening to, you were saying something about, like, even when you feel good, you can't enjoy that because you don't trust it.
You notice, even when you're feeling good, there's that, you know, extraterrestrial that's visiting upon your experience that's going like,
you know it's going to go down.
Well, it's saying something, right? This
this
habit of self-referencing, it's a psychiatric, call it psychological, habit of self-referencing in the midst of truly impersonal experience. And that self-referencing by design, by geometry, by its nature, is, you know, the primary buzzkill or buzzkiller, the self-referencing.
But along the same lines, it seems to me that there's a certain fascination, almost an enjoyment of horrible stuff. You know?
Why not?
I mean, there's terrible news, and there's this, like, somehow this fascination, like, wow, you know, you're feeling really bad.
Consciousness is very voyeuristic.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right? You're a voyeur of everything that's appearing. Whether, no matter what the source of the news is, whether it's your own imagination, whether it's agreeable or disagreeable events that are appearing to show up in your life, or the shit that you can look at through the mass media of everything good, bad, and indifferent that's happening, apparently happening to everybody else. Right? Whoa! It's like we're all on the boat with L. Ron Hubbard. Imagining that we're going to change the world through running the e-meter to the point of clear. And then you end up as a kind of a voluntary psychopath and protect the institution at all cost.
Yeah, it's not like Tom Cruise isn't still seething underneath. You know, you can see it.
Yeah, well, you wonder.
He's likable, but, you know. I don't know what that e-meter thing is. It measures like how much you react to something.
The e-meter is a primitive form of lie detector, which will pick up certain galvanic, right, skin responses and perhaps respiratory or cardiac responses, depending on the sensitivity of the instrumentation. That can give the auditor, you know, the cop who's interviewing you, feedback so that you can try to get to what's untrue, not unlike Byron Katie, and come clear or clean with the un- or subconscious material that's still invading or being a buzzkill on your consciousness, referred to as thetans, which are of an extraterrestrial origin. And so getting clear, at least in the Scientology parlance, as you go up the ladder, is ridding your psyche, your autonomy, your consciousness of the extraterrestrial parasites responsible for your disagreeability and suffering. And you do that through the process of auditing. You audit the thetans out.
I didn't realize that.
Well, Where have you been?
I guess I had it wrong. I thought we were the thetans, and that they were like the benevolent creatures or something.
But maybe it's me. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I don't know. I haven't looked into it that
I've only seen that movie, The Master, and that wasn't in that.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah. Well, you can study the methodology of Scientology and see what it's all about.
25 years ago, and I'm like,
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredibly grandiose science fiction story that you're not made privy to until you've spent enough money and achieved sufficient clarity according to the experts that are auditing you, for you to now be ready for a deeper, right, view into the true mind of L. Ron Hubbard's, right?
Isn't there
a transcendental litany?
Yeah.
What's the, I'm really blanking out today, the mystical Judaism?
Kabbalah.
But you can't really read that until you're in your 40s, or isn't there something?
Well, yes, in that tradition, you know, they don't want to introduce the Gnostic or cosmic side of things until the man, because it's a chauvinistic, right? It is a chauvinistic process, depending on which Kabbalah you're playing around with. You know, Western Kabbalah, a la Rabbi Berg or his lovely wife Karen Berg, the Kabbalah Center of L.A., the Kabbalah Center of New York, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's kind of a pop Kabbalah, you know, created by over-enthusiastic charismatics that were interested in turning it into making a lot of money. Yeah. And boy, were they successful at it. But the other Kabbalists, let's say from, you know, the Middle East or elsewhere, that are really tuned into the, you know, Gnostic process, many of them were outspoken about Rabbi and Karen Berg's Western, you know, Kabbalah style. But yes, the idea is, you know, get a life, have your marriage, raise your kids, mature in the community, and then enter into, as you know, pass a certain threshold of adulthood, the Gnostic side of revelation, when you scan the Zohar and feed on the vibration of, you know, angelic light to dispel the forces of Satan, which sounds, again, a lot like Scientology. You know, Satan, Phaeton.
I didn't know Satan was part of that.
Oh, yeah, no, the Kabbalists, not all, but many, you know, can resort to, you know, get thee behind me, Satan.
Right.
Yeah. Right, as a way of administering the faith. Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder if this pushing it back in life.
Satan.
Yeah. Right.
If that has a lot to do with
Kenny,
the sexual energy of people up until a certain age.
Well, sure. A long time ago, a handful of us ragamuffin bozo losers went to see Vimala Thakkar give a talk in a retreat in New England. Somewhere in Massachusetts near the coast. And someone had the good sense to ask a kind of Vedantic question. Why does the avatar come as a male? You know, it's a curious question. It's not on the minds of every teenager, right? But we asked. She didn't hesitate, and she just said, oh, well, because the male can withhold their semen. And the woman can't voluntarily stop menses.
Well, oh, okay.
And that was a physiological reply from a so-called awakened woman that had a strong yogic background as to a curious question why the avatar appears as male, not as female. I'm like, cool. And now all of a sudden we knew something. You know, now we were privy to some inside information.
We were hoping somebody would ask that question.
I mean, it's not even true, though, for young males. I mean,
Prahlad was known, you know, to have laid down a gauntlet for other yogis that might challenge, you know, his advice. And he was known to have remarked, you know, how many generations has your family withheld its semen? I mean, he was born, so clearly his father,
his father
had done something to have a few kids. You know, but he kind of, for fun, he would trace back, you know, his own, you could call it yogic prowess, which is very, very true in, you know, Kundalini yoga or other forms of that adventure, is the withholding of, you know, vital energies, right? The withdrawal of lust, withholding of vital energies to assist the Kundalini, right? I mean, the seminal fluid, if you read the literature, turns to ojas. And ojas is of a different viscosity and energetic fluid than what you would call inseminating semen is. And it's that ojas in the root, as in, you know, perineum, as it matures and becomes of a different energetic and psychic viscosity, if dare I say electromagnetic viscosity, that's what rises up the Ida Pingala to actualize the circuits of the seven chakras. So, you know, so that whole yoga is truly about withholding, you know, seminal expression to mature the vital fluid in the body and work it north. Mantak Chia, who was around for a number of years, was, you know, selling a a Taoist approach, you know, through Qigong, right? Which was also about circulating the life energy and playing around with, you know, the withholding of, you know, seminal powers. Who might argue? Yes, master. Yes, master. Yeah, you know, I'll do my best. I'll do my best to keep a lid on it so that I can join you in some kind of, you know, blissful Kundalini Gandharva Desh that the average motherfucker can't reach. I mean, did you cut your tongue so that the, you know, the bottom of your tongue so you could reach back and tickle your, you know, pituitary gland?
No, I use
it. Why am I even talking to you?
A special feather for that.
Oh, you use that? I have a special feather. Yeah. Really? I don't know how we went there, but what the hell?
What the hell?
Wee!
Wee!
Woohoo! Wee! So the, you know, the vitality that here, the curious and imaginative vitality of what we call our lives is capable of, you know, dreaming up a storm. I mean, why do we go see a good comedian and submit ourselves to, you know, the hilarity of a mind storm, right? Of a story storm that brings us to tears. No matter what the style is, you know, Emo Phillips to, you know, whomever, Robin Williams and beyond and beyond, 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 or... Yeah, I mean, we go into ecstasy when our consciousness is released from phatonic self-imposition to the joy of dissociative imagination, dissociative elasticity. We take mushrooms or marijuana or alcohol or whatever we take so that we can have a direct encounter with some kind of dissociative cessation of, right? The banality of self.
You know what I find interesting, and I just can't quite comprehend it, is there are a number of people that I've known that get into this laughter yoga thing.
Laughter yoga?
Where they just laugh.
Why not?
And it's sort of, I guess, supposed to work backwards.
Well, that's what happened to us Sunday. Pardon me, I'm going to get some tea. When, you know, Family Nan and Bob Lisa went into a kind of a delightful hysteria.
Well,
Pat and Beth and...
Yeah, it started going around.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, they weren't consciously like, okay, now let's all laugh and then see if it feels good.
You know, that was organic.
That was organic, and that had a bit more validity to it to me, although there might have been some strong psychological undercurrent.
Well, you can try laughter yoga, because even though it may appear as a contrivance, it works. It creates a ripple effect.
You have to buy into it, and I just can never buy into it.
Okay.
I just kind of look and like, isn't this curious, you know? I see. It takes a certain amount of suspension. And
Oh, it does.
I guess I have a hard time with that. But I always had a hard time with the group mentality. Like when everybody's like, if everybody's rooting for the team. I just kind of like look at all these people rooting. I'm like, wow. Look at that. You know, I just never could quite get...
You can't go along with the crowd.
I have a hard time with it.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah.
Well, I felt kind of uptight, too. I mean, I enjoyed it, but then I was...
What was...
Hysterically.
If you don't mind... sharing.
Happy to share.
What was uptight? I mean, how were you at risk somehow?
Well, it was both a sort of... I did not necessarily understand... understand it. Like, I wasn't sure if it was, like, I've cracked up and, you know, forbidden laughter hysterics with friends, like, in, you know, midnight mass or, you know, it's a lot of fun, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun in terms of bonding.
Yeah.
But the, you know, people around you sometimes don't know what it's about, or they make feel like you're laughing at them.
Yeah.
I didn't know how he felt, you know, in my sort of mesh type of personality.
Oh, I see. So you were kind of concerned about how that rippling of laughter.
I know he can take care of himself, like, because he's the man, you know, up there. He's all
alone. Well, we can only hope so. Yeah. Right.
So,
yeah, if there's an enlightened person at the front of the stage, we're hoping that they can take care of themselves.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't have to come to their emotional rescue.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have to come to their emotional rescue.
Really? Thank you, Mick. That's the tone of emotional rescue.
Yes. But it was sort of like, it was like nice guy Sangha, and there were these other, you know, people I didn't know, and Howard, you know.
Well, you sort of don't feel like you're letting on a joke.
Yeah, that helped.
You know,
yeah.
In other words, there's something that struck Nan, and I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I got the joke.
Yeah.
And even if the joke is like, we're saying this, and then there's this. And it doesn't mesh or something like
that. Yeah, it didn't mesh. Like, I didn't hear what he... I couldn't even hear so well, like, what she was saying. And so, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I took it almost as a sign of being so frustrated that she laughed.
Yeah.
And maybe Lisa, too.
I don't know. Could have just been, you know, spaciousness. Yielding no... solution.
Yeah.
Yielding no resolution. You can get a good guffaw. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Out of yourself in so-called circumstances which you don't have any surviving frame of reference for. Ha 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 ha. What the fuck? Yeah. But it's interesting in the context of that laughter how any one of our personalities might interpret what's happening or why it got rolling or, you know, what was so-and-so's motive or experience or what was the presenter's experience of it. Was it an inside joke? Was, you know, people comfortable or uncomfortable? Yeah. I mean, to me it just seemed like some really nice organic ripples of what the fuck. Which was good because I think it also helps... you know, in a sense, interfere constructively with any agenda that the presenter might have about what needs to happen here. Right?
Yeah.
Right? And that's always good, to undermine any subtle thing that you're being enrolled in.
Yeah, you're venturing out into never. Yeah.
Well, that's, I would say, if falling open is worth the price of admission, it would be a ticket to never land. Right? Otherwise, what is it? What is the nature of ecstasy? Again, not the drug, but the revelation. You know, is it real? Is it unreal? Do I value it? Is it a fetish? Is it, you know, the warp and woof of the soul of my intimate life? How much time or attention do I give to thoughtfulness or consideration of what Peter Brown might suggest is noticing, or what Paul Hederman might suggest is traveling lighter, or what Byron Katie would suggest is not true? Ramana Maharshi, he was kind of useless. He just stared at you. You know? This is what Brahman looks like. Fuck you or join in. Right?
Well, I guess the good ones hypnotize you before you hypnotize them.
Fair enough, yeah. Good point. Yeah, the good ones will hypnotize you before you hypnotize them. Right. And how do you make a discovery about something that is a very slippery sublimity? Oh, my goodness. We're certain about so many things from an encyclopedia, from education, from the bobbleheads on TV. We pretend to be certain about so many things. But when it comes to one's own ineffability, it's a different game now, right? We can't be certain of our own intrinsic ineffability through knowledge. How are you certain of your present experience? Through knowledge? No. But what could we accuse? What could we hold responsible for the certainty of your present experience? If it's not knowledge, what then? I mean, it certainly isn't body, though we do a bunch of accusing, right, around body. We do a bunch of accusing around mind, or emotion, or feeling, or self-assessment, or everything we think the fuck is going on, according to us. But guess what? When you really look at the miracle of, fuck, this is so, you don't know what to call the confidence in that. You might say, I think, therefore I am. Oh, is that what this is? I think, therefore I am. Or the body was born, therefore I have confidence in the ineffability of the present texture of my experience. Bullshit. I mean, total bullshit. But ask that simple question. It's not that threatening of nearly anybody. I don't know. Nobody knows what to hold responsible or accountable for the irrefutable bizarritude that something or other is so. Nobody knows. I mean, you ask Ramakrishna, you know, he just goes into one of those, you know, samadhis. His eyes roll up into his head. He goes stiff. You know, they have to hold him so he doesn't fall over. That's his answer. Master, what can we say is responsible for the fact that this appears to be appearing? One God. You know, I'm out of here. I mean, ask Paul Hederman, who's coming to visit. Ask Peter Brown. You know, we can email Adam Jaxfield and ask him. You know, Adam, what the fuck? What's going on here? One God, I don't know. You know, I mean, but we walk around like, you know, harumphing bacteria, insisting that, I know what this is. I know how I feel, why I feel the way I feel, the context to place it in, whether it's serious or not serious, whether it's true or untrue, whether it has utility or doesn't have any utility. And your fucking consciousness keeps streaming into view faster than you can say boo, absolutely uninvited. And yet we walk around saying, I got this. And I'm suffering, and I know why I'm suffering. The so-and-so told me while I'm suffering, like the fucking Buddha told me why I'm suffering, you know, and all of his accolades since then, or the church tells me why I'm suffering, and that's going to be, you know, that won't quit until I go to heaven if I'm so lucky. Or, right? Everyone will tell you.
Or there's faith in the master plan, in the universe.
Fair enough. Some people get by on magical elements of faith. I mean, if you're born again, in the faith, in the presence, in the invitation of Christ. You're worry-free for the get-go. I guess. I mean, I've sought that experience, but, you know, it was a closed door. Christ was like, no. Get away from me. I'm like, all right, Lord, fine. You know, I mustered up as much supplication as I could. When I could, And it apparently was insufficient. I knocked, and it was insufficient. I came up empty-handed. Even though they tell you, knock and you shall receive, seek and you shall find. Fuck, there's nothing to find, and my knuckles are raw, and the door is still shut tight. Yeah, who knows? I don't know. If it were so easy, you think more people, you know, would have, like, had some success. It doesn't appear that a lot of humans on the so-called fucking planet have had a lot of success with seeking and finding and knocking, and it shall be opened unto you.
Well, the point when you watch some of those Sunday services shows, holy smokes, there's thousands of people in Crystal Cathedral or whatever it is.
Well, that's bankrupt, and Schuller just died, yeah.
Oh, did he just die?
Yeah, Robert Schuller, the founder of the Crystal Cathedral, just passed away recently.
I have to say, every time I heard
and it went into bankruptcy.
But it was
worth tens of millions when it was hot. When he was evangelizing on a Sunday morning with his beautiful collars and his, you know, great way of expressing himself, the Crystal Cathedral was the shit.
Oh, yeah.
Gave me a Woody once in a while, yeah. Woo! I'm one with Christ. One with Christ. I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Pops. It's the same idea. We're fucked. God damn it. Shit. It's like I can't take anything sufficiently seriously to give enough of myself over to it for it to be solvent enough to rid me of me. God damn it!
That's a real catch.
Isn't that a catch? I mean, I want to be rid of me, but I don't have enough momentum, enough engineering, enough commitment or sincerity to submit myself to something that could possibly rid me of me. And so I remain, you know, ecstatically, if not curmudgeonly, me.
That was Groucho Marx's problem, too, right? You know, the club that he...
Right. I wouldn't want to be a member of any club that would have me, right? I wouldn't join any club that would have me as a member.
Such a great line.
Yeah, all right. Fuck.
I have my pride.
And all of this ecstasy that, you know, people are seeking through association with teachers and teachings and yoga and higher consciousness and Machu Picchu and photographing orbs, right, or ayahuasca, the list goes on and on. I mean, come on, this is a fucking playground of getting off. I don't know who it's working for. Wayne Dyer, you know, I mean, did he hit a home run? He's worth tens of millions of dollars. Did Deepak Chopra hit a home run? He's worth tens of millions of dollars. Carolyn Meese, did she hit a home run? I don't know, maybe she's worth $8 million. I have no idea. Byron Katie's certainly rolling in it. Oprah Winfrey is probably the most successful female the planet has ever known, other than, let's say, Betsy Ross, right? Or Madame Curie. I don't know. So she hit a home run. You know, her consciousness is one with the angels.
I don't have any confidence that they feel any better about themselves than anybody else.
I don't know, because you just don't know. You know, all you get from personalities, well-coiffed, in every respect, well-coiffed personalities that are here to sell you a better day, well, you know, they must appear as if they're, you know, lofty beyond reproach. How do I get my share of that? Not likely in this lifetime. I better figure out a different approach, right? I'm not going, so I better figure out some other letter.
You're not very good at filtering or censoring yourself.
Yeah, really. I hate you. You know, what else is new? Well, you got to know me better. What else can I say?
I hate you all.
Well, you got to know us all pretty well. I hate you all. Which is a little different than the cute Tibetan monks that come here from time to time and say, I love you all. No, when it comes to this, it's like, I hate you all.
You can all go to hell.
You can all go to hell. I don't trust any of you. I'm so frustrated. Your ideas suck. Your meditation is poison. And I'm just starting. Don't get soft on me. I'm just getting wound up here.
It's like Festivus.
Festivus, of course it is. Everything is like Festivus. That's why they call it Festivus. It's the all-embracing holiday of total acceptance.
This is the airing of grievances.
Oh my God!
They're gonna wrestle each other or something.
Yeah. Well, if there's no takeaway for the likes of you, for the likes of your consciousness, what next? If there's no takeaway, if there really is no solution for the likes of you, where do I turn next? What if I'm out? What if I'm absolutely out of petrol on this one? And I can't put a drop of fuel back in the tank to recommit to making this better. Fuck. What if I'm really out and I can't recommit to making this better? What are you going to do now? You may as well go right for the throat of the crisis. What are you going to do with yourself or about yourself when you've run out of fuel to make it better? I don't know.
Certainly the alcoholic, standard archetypical image is that they hit the bottom before they can go.
Well, yeah, so that's what, you know, we're bottom fishing.
So do we have to hit a bottom to lift ourselves?
You're there. You're at the bottom. You're there. It doesn't have to get any better or any worse to be at the bottom. It just doesn't. You could say the revelation of hitting an addictive bottom, which is a certain kind of privilege, right?
Yeah.
That's a certain kind of privilege. It may not feel like one, but it truly is a certain kind of privilege. If you've hit what we consider an addictive bottom, then you've been forced to see that you're absolutely out of fuel to make this any better or any different. Then you hit, you could say, if you're lucky, you come into contact with a revelatory bottom, which is not just the circumstantial despair of your stupid choices. It's something more ecstatic than that. And hopefully that ecstasy of hitting a revelatory bottom may assist you in recovering whatever dignity may be left for the remainder of your life, and how deep that dignity may go. It's anybody's guess. For some, sustaining sobriety amongst the fellowship of other addicts is a life well lived, and bravo. No argument. Bravo. And for others, you know, the revelation of that kind of sobriety may just insist on maturing further. It may insist on maturing further. It may just either sneak up on you, or you may be driven to have encounters with teachers and teachings that, right, nudge you into a different dimension. Who's to say? How many, the Pebble Hill, you know, I mean, I love them. Nah, I fucking hate them. Whatever. But just as a case in point, you know, the entire Pebble Hill community was aware of, let's say, Adam's open-hearted presentation on Sunday. And of that entire community, one person from Pebble Hill was in the room. One.
Oh, who are all those other people?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
They're not. No, they weren't.
I assumed they were.
No, they were people that were either aware of the talk through Dale, who hosted Adam's visit.
Oh, I see.
Or they're people that may have had prior encounter with Adam through Webb or other, you know, intermediaries.
Oh, okay.
They weren't Pebble people.
They weren't? I thought one of them was one of your craniosacral people. Everybody looks familiar after a while.
Yeah, everyone looks the same when you're touching their heads. Yeah, I'm your Yankee. Yeah, wow. So you could have communities, yogic communities, meditation communities, interfaith communities, absolutely committed in writing and otherwise to awakening. Right, so fucking black and white. It's in the credo. It's in the principles. That's what we're down with. I'd rather go to Machu Picchu and fuck an orb. Sorry to be so graphic. But you know what I mean.
So much for holding your fluids.
Yeah, right. Oops. More semen on the loose. Damn it. Click, another lifetime. It's another lifetime. Keep that meter running, pal. Go ahead, keep it running. Oh, another lifetime.
That was so close.
That was so close. Oh, let me live it as a frog.
Speaking of frogs. You know that thing they talk about, like if a frog jumps in the hot water, it'll leap out.
Oh, yeah.
But if you put it in...
Slowly,
if you turn the skillet up slowly.
Yeah, that's right.
So...
Right.
Awareness, is it like that, too? Is that why some people have those big radical sort of revelations? Because they get thrown in the hot water quickly for some reason? And
No. But why not? I mean, it's too strange.
Yeah.
Right? What this is... Far be it for me to suggest what it might be. I would be lying. What this is revelatory at its teeth. Right here, right now, this is unadulterated revelation. Truly unadulterated ecstasy. Beyond measure, beyond comparison, beyond knowledge, beyond vita and advaita. Beyond the duality and non-duality, beyond even the most gifted stream entrant, this is other. Here it is. So you tell me, what is the nature of a revelation that goes, I should have known, instead enjoys or suffers being embroiled in, right? Dissension or divergence, spinning away from itself by virtue of consciousness, content, pattern recognition, association, and the miracle of framing present experience through familiar eyes that make it appear to be a bardo of some kind where I live disagreeably. Right? This is a bardo called my life where I live disagreeably. And I want, because I'm no fool, I want this to feel and look and be better. Because I've heard through the grapevine that this could really be the shit. Who told me that? Byron Katie and Ramana Maharshi and...
Heard some things.
I heard some things. I know a cousin of mine knows someone who has a friend with a sister-in-law from Jersey, as a matter of fact, that heard about enlightenment. And I thought, what the fuck? Oh, that's for me, too. Yeah. I don't want to get too close, mind you. I feel, you know, sufficiently enmeshed that I'm concerned for the experience of the presenter, who may not be understanding our, you know, disrespectful laughter.
Well, the other people, too. I mean, you know.
I understand. Mm-hmm. Whoa. this is some dreamy shit. And it's so good at being dreamy shit that that, as if there were a that, and there's not a that, there's only imaginarily a that, it appears that you're existing as a durable creature.
Until you're not.
Until perhaps something strikes you, cordantly or discordantly, that enables you to rethink that position. And these are the catharses, you know, that are written about in the, you know, in the books and biographies of the so-called awakeners, or everyone that goes to a SIG meeting. Yeah. You know, I mean, if they were having a thing at friends' meeting,
yeah,
you know, I'd step in. Well, maybe I get some banjo music out of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, tell all your friends, hey, Jesus is talking at the deli. Oh, really? Yeah, he's there now. Yeah, well, you know, game's on.
Yeah. Well, that's what it feels like. I mean, there's very, very few people who enter a dialogue.
Is there a deliverable on the other side of my present ignorance that's other than this? Right? Is there a place that I can attain to, rest in, revel in, that's other than this? And if there is, you know, what is it? Harry Potter was, what was the track 3.5 or whatever it was? I mean, didn't they have to go through a brick wall to get into,
oh,
right, a different part of the train station? Yeah. By running straight into a brick wall, right? I mean, maybe we should all go to, you know, a local train. So let's go to Center City, go to the train station, and just start slamming into anything we can find, hoping to get on the magic track so we can get our silly asses to Hogwarts. You know, then once you get to Hogwarts, you're going to fucking die, because he who should not be named is trying to kill everybody. It's just like there's no end to it.
Mm. It's always something.
It's always something. Oh, God damn it. Fuck. I was hoping that there would be something that I could apply myself to with, you know, all of the minimalist enthusiasm that I'm capable of. Really, it's a homeopathic amount. To see if I could get my fair share of whatever the fuck it was that Ramana Maharshi was, you know, talking about. And you can't mimic your way there, can you? You can't mimic your way there. You can fake it until you make it, and you'll end up with a bunch of fake it.
Until you get really frustrated. Forget that.
Maybe that's, yeah, that's part of it too. I mean, you know, when Ramesh was alive, he said one thing like, oh, a sign of your is you're not seeking anymore. Within minutes, nobody was seeking anymore. In the same group. They were still on retreat, but they had all committed themselves to not seeking anymore in hopes that what Ramesh was saying was true about them.
It's like a Life of Brian movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Blessed are the cheesemakers.
Well, okay, let's go back to that seeking thing. Okay, but how do you know if you're just not seeking or you're just fucking lazy? That's what I want
to
know.
Oh, well, that's another side of it, yeah. Have you given up seeking so that you can let everyone know how advanced you are? Or are you just really lazy and you're compensating? Right? You don't want to be found out. You don't want to be found out. You know, the teacher's like, hey, that's really insufficient effort. you know, you're not going to get enlightened because your effort blows. It's really
like Zen in the Art of Archery, you know, it pulls the bow back. And a true Zen master can let it go in such a way, with such quickness, that it goes, just the speed is. Most people do it, and they let it go. They're thinking, let it go, and it doesn't do so well.
Yeah.
So the one guy, he does it, this is from like little everyone, he just kind of, he lets it just sort of slide off his finger. And he kind of did that, and the master says, let's see that again. And he did it again. He goes, out!
He threw him out?
Yes.
Oh.
Because he was faking. You know, very clear, he could tell.
Oh, the master could tell.
It was like,
right, get out, you fake.
Yeah.
Well, I've been thrown out of most places with that very moniker. Get out! No, I've been found out again. Get out. All right, I'll go. Your insincerity smells from here. You're right. I'm leaving. I'm leaving town. It's just terrible. If you're out of excuses and out of explanations and out of justifications and you're out of the whatever small chance you thought you had left to amount to something, you're fresh out. Fresh out. And that's not nothing. You're fresh out of everything. Fresh out of mind. Fresh out of posture. Positioning. You're fresh out. And you'll cope with that as, you know, with whatever charm you can muster. But it sure is, let's say, a different style of failure than trying to untrue yourself to realization.
It's more like you have to come to untrue than be told to untrue.
You think? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, because your present experience is, for argument's sake, as much or more untrue than it is true. Well, thankfully, you don't have far to go to untrue yourself. But look how nimbly we fight for territory, posture, and position on evaluating or trying to present ourselves as true. What I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, where I am, why I am, the choices that I made, the consequences, where I'm going next, right? The assessment of whether my life is aimless or purposeful and to whom exactly. I mean, all of that is fairly observantly, self-observantly imagination. So one has at one's disposal the gift of untrue without having to get engaged, right? You don't have to be involved in any specific story that's being told. You can go to a sub-basement of untrue. Is this present experiencing true? Is it untrue? Does it amount to anything? Should it? Must it? do I really need to unravel my horror show from thought? And if I do, if I apply this kind of a hypervigilance to untrue myself, have I really come to untrue? Or am I still fucked with what appears to be true? How many levels down are there of untrue? What if you don't need to feel better about anything? That would be a kind of a cool untrue. But look how easily we become engaged in needing, wishing, hoping, supplicating, praying to feel better about things. That's not enough untrue. That's too much true. So that, and we can appreciate the durability, let's say, there's some word there. The genesis of true, right? It can appear to us very easily that there's a genesis of true, and consciousness is streaming, and mind and association are streaming, and sensation is streaming, and we derive from this show that something is true, and I'm on stage. And once those, you could say, two things, which are truly just one thing, occur to you, right, this is about something, meaning it's true, and I'm on stage. Bye. Mm. Goodbye. Goodbye. Which is not truly a goodbye, it's just you could see one swiftly get sucked into the white water of imagination. Oh, fuck. So the unwinding or unbinding, thank you, Buddha, right, for unbinding, has nothing to do with what we call the personality or the body or the mind or the self or what's true and what's untrue. It's none of it's relevant. Unbinding is how deep. Unbinding is how vital. It unbinding could reveal to you in your present experience that A, nothing's happening, nothing is true, and you are certainly not on stage. And you could say the view of untrue, we'll call it that for fun, the view of untrue, which is discovered in your present experience, right? We're not going to Pluto, Saturn, Machu Picchu, right? We're not swimming with dolphins. We're not trying to have intercourse with, you know, agreeable yetis, although that could be fun. I mean, that's a workshop I would go on. You see, we're not going anywhere or doing anything or hoping for some kind of transcendent encounter to occur. We're interested in, or let's say sensitive to, the poignancy of untrue right where we stand. That's some sweet shit. It turns out that you are nothing other than the poignancy of untrue right where you stand. Nice. High five.
It's just a weird tangent. Very weird tangent.
Thank goodness for those.
It occurs that maybe this untrueness has to show itself. It has to, just by its nature. And it could be that that's part of what
to be with for one sleep or anything.
We have to. We have to go back to untruth. I mean, because it seems like, you know, and then at a certain point, it all coincides with, you know, the rejuvenation effect of the body and getting up and then going totally into true again. But we can exist in untruth for a while.
Nirsagadatta was quoted as saying, the bij or seed for the appetite for enlightenment comes from deep sleep, the untrue. Somehow the recognition of untrue pierces the somnambulism of deep sleep, wafts into the waking consciousness, and must find its resolution. That's as good a poetry as any.
That's kind of cool.
It's totally cool. It's like the avatar comes as a man because men can, if they're so inclined, withhold their semen. I mean, I'm in, whatever, you know. Okay.
That's because they just didn't want anybody fraternizing on that retreat.
I think so, yeah. Don't fraternize, I know.
You're trying to crowd control you guys.
That's a way to put it.
Maybe that has to do with brothers. I don't know. Some other way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they accused, you know, Vivekananda of being, you know, what is it, a bar fly? But if you go to brothels, are you a brothel fly? So all of these great, great traditions of, you know, saints from India and all of the accomplishments of their caste and their revelations were all cast into, what is the word, aspersion?
Yes.
Right? Doubt and things that should not be so. How did Chidvalasananda steal Siddha Yoga from her brother, who she was supposed to share it with under Muktananda's written will? Well, she simply accused him, because he was supposedly a renunciate, of cavorting with women. And that was supposed to be enough of an accusation within the entire body of Siddha Yoga internationally for Chidvalasananda, who was an opportunist with a capital O, to cut her brother out of the co-ownership and co-management of the institution of worldwide Siddha Yoga. And they harassed him for decades, just like the Scientologists harass people that depart from their halls. I mean, so much skullduggery accompanies these lofty institutions of enlightenment for sale. You know? I mean, what is it? It's like semen and cash. I didn't want to say pussy because of the recording. I'm glad I held back, too. I mean, what do we have here? Oh, my God. We may as well become messianic or something.
Do you ever measure your Facebook likes after the day after? Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you use anatomical remarks, it tends to spike. Spikes up. Hey, that guy said pussy. Talking about enlightenment? Wow, how do I sign up? I'm sorry, I'm not so filtered. You started it.
I did. Gauntlet there.
I mean, how libidinal is this? To the bone, to the marrow, to the cell, to the mitochondrial spark, to the photon, to the Higgs boson. No matter what you find here, right, no, on whatever level of cosmicity you may be looking, whether it's the, you know, clusters of spiral galaxies or, you know, down to the submicroscopic, I mean, it's just a libidinal party, just fucking toga party. Toga, toga. You know, Om is spelled wrong. It should be T-O-G-A. It shouldn't be A-U-M. It's fucking T-O-G-A. What, you can't hear it? Toga, toga, toga. You know, the gurus would like you to think, like Brother Charles. Remember Brother Charles? He had a whole cassette series of, you know, he should have been going, toga, toga. It would have been more to the point. Yeah. When we stumble into, call it a, you know, a subtle but dynamic revelation of our own unbinding, which is a spontaneous view, right? The unbinding is here, right? Now it's no longer an event. What the hell is this? Other than nothing, zero, untrue, and unbound or unbinding. That's the kickback, if you will. Not as in bakshish, but right. Kick back into your, oh my goodness, what is this? All of these incredible forces are at play. The force of creation, the force of imagination, mitochondrial heat, right? Metabolic waste. All the juices and all of the vitality and all of the light and all of the aromas and pheromonal beatitude and the position of the planets and, you know, how we feel about ourselves or a thing or a person or a TV show or how much money we have or don't have or how much regret we have or don't have or what's in our future when we make a life change of some kind. Right? We can become overwhelmed faster than you can say Jiffy peanut butter with an absolute pageant of imagination that makes it appear as if you were here a moment ago. That's how quickly the entire genesis of creation springs into view in your awareness. Then we can actually go looking for an archaeological record of ourselves. I mean, it's one thing if a group of students go to a dinosaur dig and, you know, with a brush and pull out some nice mastodon teeth. I mean, that's fucking cool. But we go on an archaeologic dig in our own mind, in our own consciousness, when there's nobody there. We keep looking for bones, fragments, you know, petrified remnants that we can take to the crystal shop. That's right, what we do internally by participating in imagination as reality. And then try to do something about just how annoyed and disagreeable we've become, because the volume of the suffering is really starting to fucking annoy me. My own suffering, right? The volume of my own suffering is really starting to fucking annoy me. And what do I do? In the midst of pulling out more instrumentation to do more, you know, archaeological digging on the imagination of yourself. Yeah. I wish this was durable. You know, I wish I could, one could hand out, you know, a scarf or a medal or a certificate of some kind to say, oh, thank you for coming, and now you're a graduate of our correspondence course, and here's, you know, the evidence of that, and go live happily. You know, I mean, if you take vows with Thich Nhat Hanh, right, or Byron Katie turns you into a surrogate therapist, does that mean, or like when Kane from Kung Fu had to leave the temple by, right, placing his forearms on red-hot steel, right, cast iron, to lift the hibachi. To get it out of the way, right? It was an incredibly heavy hibachi loaded with completely fiery coals, and he had to put his forearms on it to lift it and move it out of the way so that he could leave the temple in the snow. And, of course, the metal emblazoned the scars of dragons on his forearms. That was the way out. I don't. Do we have to do the same? I guess I should start practicing.
Yeah. We have a little hot coal thing to walk through.
Yeah, we should do something. Yeah. How about Circle G? You get branded, you know, the Circle G Ranch. Drop them.
Are the chemicals released in that effort that might produce an alteration consciousness?
Absolutely, yeah. There's no telling that even if you became a purveyor of fine chemistry, could you call it awaken, not to turn it into a thing, you know? I mean, LSD, mushrooms, ayahuasca, salvia, divinorum, right? Terence McKenna, you know, dedicated his life's work to ecstatic revelation, you know, with mushrooms and other substances to free one from the man. Right. Free one from the tyranny of one's own consciousness or the collective hysteria of the social consciousness, right? Fascistic media control. Yeah, he dedicated his life to that. Ecstasy. Or the yogis, right? Whether you know, breath manipulation or the bhastrikas, you know, breath of fire, bellows.
Sufi dancing?
Sufi dancing, you know, squeezing the bandhas to assist the mature ojas to rise up the shushumna, ida and pingala to stimulate the chakras and leave the crown. You know, some said that Vivekananda had blood at the top of his head when he died. I mean, what happened? A puffin hit him, you know, square on the noggin? Or his, right, seventh chakra opened up, as in the, right, the so-called semi-fused, what are these called in the skull?
Sutures.
Sutures, the semi-fused sutures of the skull, where the occiput and parietals meet, or the frontal and the parietals meet, you know, some little... Oh, well, Vivekananda enlightened, you know, upon death because there was blood at the top of his head where his ojas streamed into the greater universe to be reunited with Ramakrishna.
What a story.
Like, oh, fantastic. That's just fantastic. I don't know.
Well, Sid did all that stuff, and he still came up unhappy, right? Did
Sid?
Siddhartha?
Sid. Yeah,
Sid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sid. Uh-huh, yes.
I mean, that means, though, then if you just sort of did some sort of, like, biofeedback, you know, put your intention on your head, you can shift the blood up to the top of your head. Is that all it takes?
Ask any Scientologist, right? Ask any hypnotherapist. Ask any acupuncturist that may have put a few needles, you know, in the crown of your head to facilitate something as curious as self-realization, whatever that might be. I don't know.
No.
Yeah. You can see from a casual observation of your own inner sanctum, just how quickly and easily and with great confidence you or one creates the fascination of an individual and the storyline and the artifacts to accompany the fascination of the individual. Right? That look how quickly you arise in your own experience. How long does it take for you to arise in your own experience? What's the delay factor? Stranger, right? It's like somehow stranger than instantaneous.
But you said before that doesn't, the imagination aspect of creating a self doesn't necessarily negate the no self.
I lie, that's all I can do. Anything that I say is useless.
Yeah.
I mean, really useless. Yeah, because nothing's happening right now.
Yeah.
So no self is actually created through any particular means, and no obscuration of self is actually possible. So the notion of there being suffering and a sufferer, or the end of suffering and or an emancipated, you know, being, is just part of a comic book, right? So there's no, you can't draw any causal relationship between one idea or imagination and another, because look, you're just streaming into view right now with nothing to show for it and no pedigree. Consciousness, your experience is on the table, no pedigree, no takeaway, no actual consequence, but the profusion of more imagination. Yeah, really, what do you got, profusion? When do you want it now? Right? When do we want it now? What do we want? Profusion, when do we want it now? When's enough? Never. Fuck. This isn't, you could say, endless, at least thus far, right?
So far,
all I have to show is, I don't know how I got here, how I made it this far, or how endless profusion appears to be showing up without even asking me permission.
What are you
going to do? Have a nice day. Or if it's nighttime, you know, have a good night's sleep. Refresh yourself so you can have some fresh profusion tomorrow. Good luck with the mortgage and the house and the
radon.
And the radon, yeah, it's the latest. When a little radioactivity never hurt anybody.
What is the distinction to make between this conversation and normal conversation?
Okay.
And that
maybe that's all you get. Some kind of distinction. Don't ask me what.
Endless self-confession and self-attachment, self.
No. Yeah, what would be the point?
The point is that it appears to be driven by the need to come into existence.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to listen to.
Right.
I was struck speechless.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, except I got a free meal. For 2 hours I had to listen to these women.
Uh-huh.
Go on.
They're the worst.
Yeah. They remember every goddamn thing. Can connect to every person who's connected to another person.
Wow.
And the stories that they tell are endless.
So you submitted to that just so you could get a meal? I'll take you out for lunch. I won't say a word.
I don't do it often.
Thank God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a couple of people wondered what happened, and nothing to say.
Mm.
Instead, I was spending all my time listening and being dumbfounded. Like that what they were saying, they actually saw it had value.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It meant something, and that's what they're relying on.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, they certainly, in the moment of the dinner, came alive. It looked like there was animation,
mm-hmm.
a lot of talking, and that constituted an expression.
Yes.
Normally, I would jump in and say something.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely couldn't. So I think I've been ruined.
Mm. Yeah, there's no telling what symptoms may appear.
What would be the point?
Just to keep them off your track.
Yeah. Rumination has a certain kind of agenda and inertia. Mm-hmm. And then spoken word to elucidate the rumination and the storytelling also has a, you know, fulfills a certain kind of cosmic flow in us, mm-hmm. right? Imagination, thinking, feeling, speech, interfacing with each other, right? There's a like, it's yeah, really, Marco Polo. Marco Polo, Marco Polo. And it's very curious, if not a little disarming, when, let's say, a human being that should otherwise be participating in this flow of nonsensical reference.
His presence.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you discover that you're curiously nourished by, beyond all imagination, with the revelatory presence of fascination and profusion.
Mm.
And neither fascination nor profusion incarcerate you.
Mm.
Then what are you? Not the body. Not the mind. Not the uppercase or lowercase self.
Mm.
Also, we strip it down, like any good carpenter knows how to strip it down to the bare wood, nature's grain. Neither fascination nor profusion incarcerate.
Mm.
Now there's no argument. There's the myth of becoming is flatlined.
Hmm. And yet, I was having the experience of being in present.
Yeah. Right. Why not?
What did I give a fuck that I had to call it? Memories.
Well, that's real interesting. As we decouple from the seduction or urgency to go into memory to express ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. I mean, when you go on a job interview, right, you just stare at the ceiling.
Mm. Yeah.
Hey, I think I might really like this job. Well, what are your qualifications?
Yeah.
What? Me worry? You know,
I'll figure it out one
day. Yeah, yeah, really. I don't know. I'm kind of degreed, and I've been around the block, so maybe I'll figure it out as it happens. Well, you're hired. You know? Signing bonus.
That's what I'm saying. You got to keep them off your track. You got to, sometimes you just fake it.
You got to head fake it all the time, yeah. That's right. Yeah, enlightenment is a lot like playing basketball. You got to pretend to go up for the shot, throw them off, and then just tap it in.
Usually the jobs I get are the ones I don't have to interview for.
See?
That's how bad I am.
That's how bad you are at interviewing, yeah.
They just fall on my lap.
Right.
Like,
oh. Yeah, we need a body.
Yeah.
I'm in.
You have a master's degree and a license?
Really? Okay. Just show me your paperwork. Okay, can you start on Monday?
I think I can make money off you. You're hired.
Right. Yeah, you're just the person I was looking for. Don't tell me anything about yourself. That would ruin it. I have been, I mean, I've participated in many a family event, you know, nursing a gin and tonic or whatever it is, and, you know, minding my own business. And I'm envious, actually, of how much fun everyone else seems to be able to have. Not that I'm not having fun, it's just a different, you know,
right.
It's a different bardo. I don't know.
Well, I think I've been cured of the background obligation to do that.
Nice.
I really didn't care.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. Right. Release from the psychic pressure of fellow human beings.
Yes. The social obligation to entertain the host.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not up for today. I'm in a loose door in this hotel. Nothing to contribute. Except I'm listening.
I really enjoyed the ribeye.
Yeah.
The asparagus were done perfectly. And this was a mighty fine bottle of wine that you brought out. Other than that, I'm not really sure what to say about myself.
It's just so hard to remember things, but I don't know if that's age or what.
No, that's something. I think that's a. It's a little like in construction, there's always stuff left over. And it serves as a reminder that you actually existed and did something.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And it's very hard to throw around. You have to be disciplined about cleaning the site up.
The scrap.
Throw the scrap up.
Wow.
That's interesting.
I like it. Nice metaphor, yeah. Right. Throw out the scrap and then burn the house down.
No, better yet. Forget it.
Yeah.
I mean, don't call me.
Right.
It's yours.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear how great it is. I don't want to hear any problems with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm always just perpetually leaving town.
Ha, 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 ha.